Hello and welcome to The Interior Design Business. My name is Jeff Hayward and I'm here with my co-host, Susie Rumbold, past president of the British Institute of Interior Design and creative director of Tessuto Interiors, in front of a live audience of designers at the Natural Matte Showroom in Knutsford. Today, we will be exploring the topic of design for health and wellness.
Interior design has evolved way beyond mere aesthetics to embrace wellness as a core principle. Whether designing homes, workplaces, or public spaces, integrating wellness into design decisions is no longer optional. It is essential. But whereas in the past wellness referred only to physical comfort and health, today's definition has expanded to include mental health, the long-term health of our planet, and of society as a whole. Never before in the history of the built environment have interior designers had so much to worry about or been under so much pressure to do the right thing. But what exactly is the right thing? And how should we be specifying to do no harm? And how can we fight against the tide of greenwash that threatens to engulf and overwhelm us? Welcome to the Interior Design Business.
We are in the beautiful and very comfortable Natural Matte Showroom in Knutsford, Cheshire, where we are joined by our host, Mark Tremlett, founder and managing director of Natural Matte. We're also joined by Fiona Watkins, founder and creative director of Fiona Watkins Studio, and Melanie Zarins, project director at international design powerhouse TP Bennett. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So before we begin, could you possibly give each of us just a very brief introduction to yourselves, your businesses, how long established, et cetera, and kind of, you know, what you do generally? So Fiona, do you want to kick that off?
Yeah, sure. I'm Fiona Watkins. I have a design studio based in Davelham, which is not far from here, actually. It's about a 10-minute drive, so this is very handy for me. I've been in business for 17 years. We have a small team. There's just four of us in total, but it's very nice makes my life much easier because I can still do the job that I love, which is designing. I'm not managing people. My team are lovely. And that's me.
Hi, everyone. I'm Melanie Zarins, interior designer, project director at TP Bennett. So I'm based in our Manchester office. Our head office is in London, which is very large, but there's around, well, more than 30 of us in our Manchester office. We're growing rapidly. I have been there nearly 10 years now. So a lot of our business is workspace. That's our bread and butter, but we get involved in all sorts of sectors. But
so we've got one predominantly residential burner, and I think now you're very much workplace and commercial. So that's a really nice balance of the discussion. And Mark, tell us your story.
Well, hello, I'm Mark Tremlett. I'm the founder of Natural Matte. I've been doing this business for 25 years now, or just over 25 years. We had an idea back in 1999 that we'd start making mattresses using natural fibres. Originally, we started making them for yachts and motorboats. My father was a boat designer, and I saw people buying boats with horrible mattresses made out of nasty synthetic materials. And we thought, that's not very nice. We don't want to sleep on those. So we set up a business to make mattresses using organic natural fibers, not using any chemicals, not using any fire retardants. And here we are, very different sort of type of business. 25 years later, we've got five shops, sort of nearly 60 people. So it's not me making them on my old table tennis table any longer, which is a huge relief. And I'm sure it's a far, far, far better product than I ever made using my own fair hands. But so we are now, we still make for the yachts, we make for nursery industry, we make for hotels, and also we make predominantly for bedroom, which is residential homes.
Fantastic. So I want to begin kind of at the beginning, but when getting started with a new client, does the issue of wellness form part of the initial design brief? Or do most clients not mention it? Fiona, what's your take on that?
I would say for us that most clients probably don't mention it. But for us, we always incorporate that into our thinking for our designs. It's part of what we do as standard. And we obviously want to create healthy and happy homes for our clients.
Mel, different in the workplace, yeah. I bet, because the WELL standard is a big thing these days.
Completely different, yeah. So well-being is like now fundamental part of what we do. Those early conversations with the client at the briefing stage, we're talking to them about, you know, is it going to be BREEAM or LEED or WELL guided? So the client's got that option. Sometimes, obviously, the building that they're taking on may inherit one of those already that we kind of have to follow through with. And then alternatively, we actually at TP Bennett, we've developed a bespoke sustainability team and strategy. So we use that as well as part of the design process.
So I kind of feel as I already know the answer to this question, because I was going to ask you, do you consciously design for wellness? And it sounds like you kind of do. Or is it something that's just automatic? I mean, Mel, is it how embedded in your design thinking is it?
Yeah, it's completely embedded. So it's all about the spaces that the space requirements incorporates wellness suites, prayer rooms, medical rooms, gyms, fitness facilities, you know, all these kind of spaces at the moment within the workplace are a top priority for the client in order for them to have a good business and retain their staff and have their staff happy. And
there's a buzzword at the moment, which is earn the commute, isn't there?
Yeah,
and that's we go off topic slightly. Oh, Fiona, what about you?
Well, very. I mean, we have always done this as a studio. It's not been since things like COVID, which I know you're gonna drop into. But I have always done that because to me it's very important that people are happy in their homes, and the wellness factor is obviously part of that. People being happy creates that lovely feeling in their homes, you know.
And so, as a designer, you mentioned COVID. Do you think it's really ramped up since COVID? I mean, people were used to spending a lot of time in their home, and we talked a lot more about wellness at that time as well. So do you think it's really ramped up?
Yeah, I do think it is, because obviously people started working from home a lot more. So their workspaces, home spaces became much more important to them. And obviously they wanted to be able to function, have that separation between work and home. So, yes, very important.
And I'm sure, Mark, that Natural Matte is on a huge growth curve, but acceleration probably because of COVID has been a thing for you to see, I'm sure.
I think actually within the UK, and I think probably within a lot of sort of the whole kind of planet, actually, what COVID has engendered is a sense that people are very worried about being very ill. And when you've got that potential death on your doorstep, suddenly you think, oh, how can I live a really healthy lifestyle? Because, you know, I don't want to die. Very simple, you know, very black and white. And I think people's attitude to wellness is one of the reasons why I think it ramped up enormously, because they were suddenly faced with my life does actually, your life was made to change. And then they had to change, and then they wanted to make sure it changed for the better. And by doing so. So I think that, you know, that's been, COVID actually has been an incredible sort of boost to our business. But actually, I think wellness grew and mushroomed because it was a way to stay healthy.
And in the workplace environment, it's been about employers trying to get people back into the workplace to creating a healthy environment for them to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's transformed the workplace into being a destination place. So attracting people back into the workplace, offering greater flexibility in terms of like work settings and what a desk looks like, where they work within the office, and providing amenity-rich environments. So providing people with, you know, all the amenities that I just mentioned, like wellness spaces and no-tech zones and collaboration spaces.
I think if you'd have said to my parents the workplace is going to be a destination, they would have freaked out.
No, I think the workplace is no longer just a place to work.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all about reconnecting and resetting and, yeah.
It's a way to get people back to work.
And to keep them.
Fascinating.
So in terms of, I mean, we all know that toxic materials in our environment cause us physical harm. What is the mechanism for this, Mark? You know, if something's toxic, what is it doing to you? How is it getting into your body?
I suppose the most common way is sort of through VOCs, I suppose, you know, volatile organic compounds. Everything around us emits gases to a greater or lesser extent. You know, you will find selenium, cadmium, nickel in almost every single thing around you. And these are pretty kind of harsh, nasty things. But in general, they are such sort of in such small doses that they won't really make any difference whatsoever. And you can actually measure, you know, you can test everything. You test a piece of wood, you can test a piece of fern, you can test a piece of metal for everything that it might have in it. And everything does emit something. And so one thing, so it's being very conscious of being not being surrounded by things that are giving off something nasty. We take the view that if it's a natural material, actually, you know, it's going to be healthy. It's not going to be giving off anything that's harmful or toxic. People have lived around these and used these for thousands of years. Proof is in the pudding that people have stayed healthy. So just making sure that, you know, that what we do is we try and manufacture using materials we know exactly, we try to know exactly where they come from. We go through immense detail about source, process, and how they're going to arrive with us. And by doing so, then we try and ensure that everything is as clean and natural and healthy as possible.
That natural match to one side, and obviously you have very, very high standards, but Mel, you know, what happens to someone if they're ingesting, or both of you actually, what happens to someone if they're breathing in VOCs?
There are plenty of cases where people have been sitting on a sofa that's, I'm taking an extreme here, it's come out of some factory in Asia where they've used some really harmful fire retardant chemicals. And, you know, you can end up with terrible rashes on your body.
Practically, have you had to deal with those sort of situations when you've gone into projects and looked at what they've been sitting in or breathing in?
We're just very conscious these days about what materials we are putting into projects.
Cool.
Carpets, furniture, paints, you know, oiled-based paints and like the glue on carpets and things like that can be really harmful. So we go through a process where, you know, we don't allow any materials into our library for us to then specify if it doesn't meet a certain criteria. So,
and presumably, Fiona, you're thinking also about air quality, which it seems crazy as an interior designer that you've got to think about things like that too, because that's going to potentially carry mold, mildew, or just stale air is going to make you feel awful.
Yeah, of course. But ventilation is obviously a thing to do. Open doors, windows as much as you can. Things like, even when you're having a carpet fitted, even if that carpet's 100% wool, it will still have some VOCs in it if it's been treated for stain resistance or mildew or a moth, sorry. Mm-hmm. Anything like that will have these fumes coming off them. So, you know, at point of installation, you have to make sure that you have doors, windows, as I say, things like that open. But ventilation obviously is key, and then using maybe air purifiers perhaps as well. I saw a really good one recently, and it's called Breathe, and it's equivalent to having 3,000 houseplants in this little container, which is this big. And so it uses sustainable moss, and then also it has coconut and hemp within it, and that then helps to purify the air around you. It's incredible.
Because the effects can be horrible. I in the late 80s, worked in a building that had sick building syndrome. And, you know, by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, everybody in the building had a splitting headache.
Yeah.
And within, you know, a half an hour of leaving, it's walked out the door at 5:30, and by 6 o'clock, you were fine again.
Yeah. But, and that was a concrete thing, was it?
No, I just think it was stale air, bad old-fashioned air conditioning, just rubbish. Yeah, it was awful. So then, if air quality is of primary importance, which I think is kind of what we're saying, what are the things we need to be aware of? I mean, you've just touched on purifying air in the room, but what else should we be worrying about?
Well, anything that you bring into your home is toxic. Let's face it, you know, cleaning products, everything. So as I say, for me, the most important thing is to ventilate, and whether that's through the use of a mechanical ventilation system if it's a new build, or bringing something, as I say, like the Breathe in to help deal with that.
And Mel, with you in your commercial installations, this sort of air conditioning systems that you're putting in receive.
So yeah, obviously it's very, very important within the workspace. Poor air quality can affect your productivity, your cognitive function, energy levels within the office, which can then result to sick days. Mm-hmm. So as an employee client, they need to make sure that, you know, what they're putting into their new space is right in terms of air conditioning, air quality. So obviously we work with our specialist MEP consultants mm-hmm. and all that to kind of to get that right.
Mm. And you mentioned earlier chemical fire retardants, I think. So let's just talk about that, because those are problematic, but there's also change coming through from government, I believe, around later this year. I saw something that's particularly relating to bedding. I think they're going to be changing the rules around fire retardants and how that's defined. So how much do you think about that in your designs, Mel? I mean, it must be a big issue for you.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the, you know, fabrics, for example, are inherited FR. So it is kind of down to that supplier and manufacturer to, you know, make sure that those are right and within the standards, today's standards. So, yeah, it's just about keeping up to date and making sure that you're having those conversations with suppliers to make sure that they're right.
I'd actually need some things like wools and lips and things like
that. Yeah, I mean, wool that leans. I mean, there's a whole viper's nest of issues therein.
Yeah.
Different countries have different FR standards.
Right.
You know, you're different in the States. You're even different in California to the rest of states. You're nearly every country has their own ones. Yes, there is Europe. And then you go to Italy. Oh, Italy's got their own. Oh, okay. The only way you get through that is you've got to take the fire chief out for lunch, kind of thing. And that's the only way you go around it. But in the UK, we have very high and very stringent, far higher than Europe. And so, you know, there is a danger that actually the toxicity in some of the fabrics that we use in the UK are actually going to be worse than you're going to find in Europe. There are ways around it, you know. Wool, just touched on that. Wool is a natural fire retardant. There are fabrics that are made out of wool, and they are inherently Crib 5. Mm. Crib 5 is the hotel standard, and then the domestic one is lower than that. So it is possible to design furniture and fabrics for, you know, home and workplace that, you know, that can avoid entirely fire retardants. And then within fire retardants as well, there's a whole range, and you can probably buy one from a tub in China that might cost you, you know, $25, but you can buy another one that's certified by Ocotex. It might cost you 100 euros, but, you know, actually the toxicity of it is greatly reduced. So you can actually really get into the gritty detail to try and avoid that as much as possible.
How easy is it to access this information? You talk about it being a viper's nest.
Well, you've just got to get, there's a lot of rabbit holes. You know,
right.
You just got to be, you know, you've got to be a bit of a terrier, really. And you've got to just do your research. That's all it comes down to, really.
What do you find, Mel, when you're looking at that? Is there any easy reference point out there for you that really helps?
We.
The problem is that there won't be the right colour.
Yeah, we have our own in-house sustainability team that have kind of done this, like, background checks on everything. We're constantly, quizzing suppliers in terms of what are going into fabrics and things to make sure that it's right.
You know, you were saying earlier that nothing gets into your library that hasn't passed the 2% standard, which is a, you know, that's an amazing, amazing thing to have done. So just going off kind of segueing slightly, Temperatures are really important to the way people behave and think and exist. What range of temperature does most people find comfortable and sort of enhancing of their wellness?
So the ultimate range of temperature for an office is 20 to 24 degrees. And for women, it may be slightly on the higher end of that. But then that can change through seasons as well. So obviously, if it's too hot, it can cause tiredness and affect your energy levels, which affects your work, your productivity, your creativity. So it is really important to make sure that temperature is right within the workspace.
And I guess too cold, the same.
Yeah, which can also like cause maybe illnesses like arthritis and infections. And
infection.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's horrifying, isn't it? And Fiona, do you find that you know, within this temperature range, you're dealing with residential spaces where people are doing different things all over the building, your bathrooms, bedrooms, whatever.
Yeah.
Do you set, when you're designing heating, HVAC systems for buildings? Do you, for residential buildings, do you set the temperature to be the same all over the place, or is it different?
No. And, I mean, obviously that's a conversation you have with a client because everyone's different. I mean, ask me, I like that. I like our studio to be roasting. Whereas
you're from New Zealand, though.
I get it to be too hot. But normally I'd say a good range is probably 18 to 22 around the house, and maybe bedrooms cooler, you know, to help with sleeping and things like that. But yeah, you program rooms individually. We have obviously wonderful heating systems now that enable us to do that, and controls.
Well, I guess, Mark, you must be thinking from natural rights perspective about comfortable temperatures for people to fall asleep in.
Absolutely. That's the start of it. So I think, you know, a lot of people I have a problem at home. My wife wants to turn the heating up. I was going to go around and off, doesn't turn it back down again. but getting, I think, optimum temperature for the room is a really good idea. You know, and it shouldn't be too hot, really. Ventilation, windows open. Mm. I think that sets the scene. Our job really starts when they've gone to sleep. And the key thing is trying to make sure that you maintain an even temperature when you are sleeping. That's the critical thing in terms of how to try and get a good night's sleep. And lots of materials synthetic, you know, one of the fundamental reasons why natural matter exists is it's because we don't like synthetics, because synthetics do two things. They absorb heat and they absorb moisture, which are the two things you're always trying to avoid in any sleeping environment whatsoever. Natural fibers, they're inherently self-ventilating, they're inherently breathable. So they'll take away heat and they'll take away moisture from the body. And that enables the body to try and maintain an even temperature. So that is the key thing. So in a sleeping environment, on your bed, you want to try and use as many, or sleep on as many natural materials as you possibly can, because they will really help you regulate, helps the body regulate its own temperature.
Interesting. And when you've woken up, obviously, you go to work, or you might be working from home, have a home office. I'm sure you're doing a lot of home office designs nowadays. So what do you think about in terms of ergonomics to keep people working comfortably? Because, again, that's something that I think people are probably thinking a lot more about these days.
Yeah, definitely. It's absolutely important for us as workplace designers. Your posture and strain that you put on your body when you sat at your desk for a long time. Yeah. We work with a lot of very good suppliers. For example, like Human Scale, who are the top at sort of providing those products with us. So we very carefully specify the right furniture and things that someone needs at their desk. So whether it be a monitor arm to make sure it's at the right height, or your task chair with your lumbar support. So it's just creating that flexibility for someone to be comfortable at the desk and prevent those strains.
And how does that translate, Fiona, to the home? Because are you using some typically workplace products in those home office environments now?
Definitely. And actually, we get asked up for a lot of walking desks. And so people that want to have the high-low option so that they can stand and work as well, and walk if they have a treadmill.
Walk with your desk.
Walk as you're working at your desk.
Round and round and round.
It's very slow. Yeah. It's very slow. And we've worked with some suppliers actually from your part of the world.
Oh, okay.
And they do wonderful desks that rise at the touch of a button, lower, so you can either have them either to sit at or to stand at, and then obviously you have a treadmill under as well.
I think we found over the last few years actually sit stands, the client was kind of asking for maybe 20% of their desks to be sit stands. Mm-hmm. The client I'm working with at the moment is every desk is sit stands, so everyone has the opportunity to either stand or sit. It's moved on quite
and
a bit.
That's a recognition of how important that is.
Yeah.
Because that's going to cost more money for people to do that. Interesting.
That's fascinating. So, going on to lighting, does lighting in an interior have a direct impact on the physical health of the occupants?
Yes, definitely. Obviously, it's probably one of the most important things, I think, because everyone talks about circadian rhythms, about having to the definition between day and night. so that you can go to sleep on one of Mark's lovely beds and fall asleep comfortably. So the lighting is obviously very important. And we obviously work with a lot of home automation companies to ensure that lighting levels are set at, you know, what the family needs, really. Well, obviously, it's individual. But so that you have that softness in the evening and then a brighter light during the day. And I mean, obviously we are in Manchester area, so it's very dark for all of the year up here. There's a lot of grey skies. So having natural daylight to operate in at home or at work is very important. And then having that softer light in the evening to help us all relax.
Yes. And what about you, Mel? Well, obviously, you're all about productivity and making sure people are awake.
Yeah, I think obviously we spend 90% of our days in the workplace, well, most of us. So yeah, lighting is really key. That obviously we would try and plan out the office with the desks closer to the window for during the day for that natural daylight to come through, which is really important. But you do get a lot of people working overtime within the office, so you are creeping into that that night time. So specking the lighting and making sure that it is what it needs to be at night time when it is darker on winter nights as well is key.
Still maintaining people's productivity at a time when actually their circadian rhythms might be sending them gently to sleep. I can imagine that's quite a challenge. And then does that have an impact on them when they suddenly come out into the dark and they're kind of like, what happened?
Yeah. Well, yeah, obviously we work with our lighting specialists and things, so that, yeah, they make sure that it has that.
And I know, Mark, that circadian rhythm is really important in the bedroom environment. Are there any other things? We talked about natural materials, but any other things that are really important in bedrooms?
Well, I mean, you sleep, it's quite well documented now. And then I think that how you get a better night's sleep, it's called sleep hygiene. And everybody probably has heard of sleep hygiene now. 5 years ago, they probably hadn't. But there's a couple
not
of
in the workplace, presumably. But
probably not. No, not allowed.
But there's lots of things that there's things that you can do, and they're very well documented about how to get a better night's sleep. And obviously, daylight, getting enough daylight is really, really important, so that you then your body gets enough daylight. So then, actually, when it comes to sleeping, it enables you to have far better sleep. In terms of lighting, really, I mean, one of the first hotels that we did, it was called Zed Hotels, and the mock rooms were in this dank basement that the guy was using without telling the people who owned the building. So it's a complete subterfuge. And I was a bit surprised. It was down in this dark basement and none of the rooms had any windows whatsoever. And he said, no, you need, if you're going to sleep, you mustn't have windows. And apparently, in hotels, you get the best night's sleep on all the interior rooms where there are no windows. So when it's completely black out, then you have that sort of sensory deprivation. And that's where you get the best sleep.
You have a wake up.
Yeah. That's an immersion tank.
That is an immersion tank. Yes, so, light. So, you want it during the day, but you don't want it at night. Yeah. Mm. Simple. Yeah.
Mm. Interesting.
Interesting. What do you think about, Fiona, when you're doing bedrooms? Are there any key criteria that you're looking at to help people feel good?
Well, comfort. We're all after comfort, aren't we? And, well, personally, I need complete blackout when I sleep. So
you're doing lots of TVs in rooms.
Yeah, well, I really try not to do that, but people want them. But, you just obviously have to do what your client wants. But I would always advocate no TV in the bedroom.
Are there any tricks? Can you, get it to auto-switch off at a certain time when you...
Yeah. We have them built into pieces like the furniture at the end, like ottomans and things like that, where they just automatically retract. Yeah. I don't know if it's linked to the client falling asleep. Yeah. But...
maybe that makes it less of a distraction. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, and then in the workplace, Mel, I mean, are people napping at work? Are there nap rooms that you're building? Or
Some clients do ask for them. I haven't yet designed an office with one. There was talk once, but sometimes they do, yeah.
We'll design a map from at one.
Yeah. Oh, that's a
business one. A business C
sample. Paul, get a sample in.
Yeah. No problem.
So moving on to slightly a different topic then, mental health. The World Health Organization defines mental health as a state of mental well-being that enables people to cope with the stresses of life. How is a person's mental health impacted by their environment?
mental health is deeply, deeply influenced by your environment. You know, hence the reason why we are designing in sort of well-being spaces for people to just go into and switch off and have a bit of time out away from the desk. It's really important.
Is that part of a client's brief?
Yeah.
Well, not often, but I mean, obviously we all think about it now. It's at the forefront. Everyone knows about it. Everyone's talking about it, aren't they? So, yes. But I mean, again, just going back to the lighting, that is obviously key, I think, because having a bright environment, you know, rather than somewhere dark, it makes you feel miserable, doesn't it, quite frankly? So having natural light, natural ventilation, all of those things help with general well-being and ultimately mental health.
I mean, that kind of brings us on to biophilic elements. You talked about the moss earlier, and I'm sure that thinking about those biophilic elements, I mean, it's more than just plants, though, isn't it?
It's sensory, so it's sound, light, things like that. I mean, it's incorporating things, whether it's, as I say, good lighting design, sounds, whether it's, I don't know, background music. You don't have to have a water feature in your home. You can have the sound of water or the sound of waves or whatever it is that you know, that makes you feel relaxed. It's all part of that. And then incorporating things like natural materials into the home, whether it's wood, natural stones, natural fabrics, and like that.
Presumably big doors to open up to the garden and garden spaces and that kind of thing.
Okay. Exactly. And it's basically trying to bring the outside in.
Mm. And putting human beings back into the environment, which is really where we're animals, aren't we? That's where we came from. We're going to be happiest in a natural environment.
Definitely.
At least, again, Marcus, where you come in with what you do.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, I mean, it's quite interesting. And it's something that we do for when people are, this behind me is called the sleep zone. And so obviously we have all our beds lined up. I have six beds that are all lined up in here. But we wanted to make sure that when people go into the sleep zone, they really relax. What we do is, so we have at the back of the store, we have a certain degree of privacy, and then we play a soundtrack, and then we pump an aroma into there as well.
Do you know, it's really ages to set up because we were just so chilled and relaxed earlier.
We're trying to make people relax, and the whole thing is really, it's just if people are relaxed, and then they, you know, and there is that sense of
I've had in here in this bird song.
Exactly.
It's lovely.
We recorded the it was done by Tony Soper. Anybody who's old enough to remember, but Tony Soper's son, who had all these sound recordings of migrating birds, and we did it from the river down in Devon where we're based, and some of the other sort of, you know, Devon
beautiful
sounds, and providing that sort of sensory experience, I think, you know, it helps people relax. And if you're relaxed, then you know, that's going to improve your...
And what about safety? You know, people need to feel safe in an environment. I mean, you've talked about, you were talking about some of these retreat spaces that you embed into your...
Yeah, absolutely.
What are the characteristics of those?
So biophilia, it is way beyond putting a plant in the corner of a room, and it is the 14 patterns of biophilia design. Fiona's mentioned quite a few of them, but like you say, the refuge spaces is one of them. So creating those spaces where people can go and be quiet and switch off and reset is a huge part of biophilia as well.
Yeah, and surely the bedroom's the ultimate refuge space, really.
So is the living wall still a big thing in workplace, or is it?
It's still there, yeah. We're still getting clients asking for it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When they ask for a living wall, do you think, oh no, that's so last year, or do you say,
yeah,
or a good update?
It does depend on where you put it, in my opinion. It works great in a sort of reception lobby with a double height space, and when it's done well, it can look great.
And I'm intrigued. I mean, there's obviously a huge trend, huge consumer trend for wellness and yoga, meditation rooms, saunas, cold baths. Is that happening in the workplace?
Yep. Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. So we've got a project I'm working on at the moment. They've got their own gym space, yoga room, and they've actually got their own clinical suite where they've got their own doctors that come in and physiotherapists. And it's all in-house. They just want the the user to come in and to have everything in the building there for them.
Absolutely single, though, isn't it? Just keeping people at work for longer.
Yeah.
Well, and I bet you're doing a lot of those kind of spaces within houses as well, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, a lot of the home gym is not just the home gym anymore. It's so much more than that.
Yeah.
There's steam rooms, saunas,
yeah, less spaces
to get ice baths. Yeah. Again, a really great company down your way. They make these wonderful little small baths for ice baths.
It's amazing.
Fantastic.
Cornerstone.
We'll do the next one in Devon, Jess.
Sounds good.
So, in an ice bath.
No, please, no. No, you're blessing me. Now, Fiona, I know you're particularly keen on colour psychology. Do you apply colour psychology in your designs? And does that have an impact on people's mental health?
Yes, definitely it does. So this is my Bible. I'm going to show this as show and tell. I don't know if any of you guys know Karen Heller, but
she is a world-class colour psychologist.
Yes,
and she's Australian.
She is Australian. Yes, this is a really good little book, guys. If I will suggest you all buy it. It's just great. And it just goes through some
different... For our listening audience, you want to tell us what it's called?
It's The Little Book of Colour.
There we go.
Sorry.
By Karen Heller.
So sorry. Yes, Karen Heller. and it is a really... It's a little Bible that lives in our studio. And we like to refer to it. To be honest, a lot of the spaces that we design as a studio are more neutral in terms of the colour palette. We tend to like to bring in colour with clients' artwork or you know, accessories, things like that. That's what we prefer to do. But it's a really great book. Obviously, I think in workplace design, maybe more the colour thing, because obviously it affects your mood greatly, going whatever it is, whether it's a I think one of the things we talked about was the most joyful colour.
Yes.
Yellow.
What is the colour of joy?
It's yellow. Because it's sunshine, isn't it? It's the colour that you know yourselves on a sunny day. Everyone smiles, don't they? Everyone's happy. Everyone's like, oh, look, it's lovely, you know. So that is the colour of joy. But so many other colours, which I'm sure Mel will run through, you know, have impact on our emotions, and that's why you have certain rooms is better for certain colours.
Is there a colour of optimum productivity?
Well, that's a great question.
Jeff's
going to paint his office.
there's obviously, colours play a massive part in your mood and productivity and focus. I think a lot of the clients that we work with have strong brand colours, so that kind of overtakes our general palette throughout the design sometimes. So there isn't much move on that. Obviously red is energetic, passionate, you know, which works well in dining spaces, hence why McDonald's has it. And then green is obviously the connection with nature. So we do actually try and do the wellness rooms and retreat rooms, you know, with some greenery, again, more natural colours.
It's sort of related.
Purple is obviously luxurious, so we try and do like some of the lounge spaces with hints of purple. Black is more of like an important kind of colour, so maybe the client lounges and client suites will sort of bring in some of those tones a bit more.
Interesting. Yellow at the exit door.
Yeah.
The entrance.
What about noise pollution? I think that's also something that you probably have to deal with in a residential setting. How do you as an interior designer think about that and the impact that can have?
Do the client hit earplugs? No, you do. It depends where it's coming from, doesn't it? I mean, there's all sorts of things you can do to reduce noise coming in from the outside, whether it's acoustic panels, wall, ceiling. Also triple glazing, and then internally, obviously, the same. You can use fabric, you know, lovely thick curtains will help to reduce noise coming in as well as daylight. Things like that. acoustic walling.
And presumably in the city centres, that's, again, big issue you've got to deal with, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's not just the internal kind of activity spaces you've got to think about within the workspace. You know, is the traffic
zones
coming in, which all has a huge effect on each individual, because we're all different and we all, you know, neurodiversity, you know, especially, you know, some people can't deal with too much noise. And I think at TP Bennett, we approached noise control very early on in early stages of our project. So we'll do assessments and checklists and cognitive zoning planning diagrams.
Cognitive zoning planning.
So we'll assess an initial space plan in terms of high stimulating areas, medium and low stimulating areas, and we'll do essentially like a heat mapping just to kind of see where we're at, see if there's any clashes with high and low next to each other. So yes. Low would be like your focus pods, your focus rooms, your, you know, more quiet spaces. High is your more like T points and collaboration zones. So yeah, it's just to see if there's any flags and just to kind of show it to the client as well and say, this is why we've planned it like this, you know.
Right. So planetary health. So far, we've been talking about designing wellness into our clients' immediate built environments. But do designers also have a responsibility to design for the long-term wellness of our planet? What impact do the choices we make when designing have on this? So I think that's a good one for you, Mark.
I think that now there's a responsibility on designers to design the afterlife as well as the current life.
Sounds a bit ominous.
But you should think about where your product's going to end up when you're designing it. That's basically what I mean. And so, you know, you're designing it, so, you know, make sure that there is a purpose to the materials or the product when it comes to, you know, when it ceases to be, in our case, a bed or a mattress. You know, there are things you can do with either the materials or how they can be repurposed and how you could make something new out of it. So I think more and more it is the responsibility of the designer to design really for the long term.
Mm. And now I'm sure, because you must, all your products must be operating under BIM, so you've got lots of...
Our role is very, very crucial in terms of how it's shaping our planet. It's a huge responsibility for us. Everything that we specify, the longevity of the products that we're specifying, the chairs, for example.
What on average do your fit outs last? What's the shelf life?
It does vary. Anything from sort of 5 to 20 and so on. Yeah. So we'll try and specify a chair. It might be similar to this, like a Carl Hansen, is it? I don't know. You know, a chair that's going to last a long, long time and a manufacturer that will take it back and refurb it and then give it back to you. So, yeah, it's just being conscious about things like that when we're specifying, and also working with the client in terms of reusing. So they might have an office that they're moving out of and they've got a whole lot of furniture that they can reuse. So it's doing that kind of audit early doors to see how we can work with them and reuse as much as possible. But yeah, they're just a few of the things that we need to be doing.
And Fiona, do you have a similar methodology in your...
Yeah, we try and incorporate as much, whether the client has existing things. If it's it's obviously different for a new build, but like for a refurbishment, something we did, a project not so long ago where we had the kitchen that was being removed. So we used the kitchen cabinetry to make wardrobes for the client, and also used some of those in the bathroom as well. And then we just painted it. So we reuse part of things that had always been in the house, which I always think is nice. It stays in the house, and then you just repurpose them in whatever way you can. And a lot of the suppliers that we work with as well, we try and work with companies that use obviously sustainable materials. We know where it's sourced from, and then it can be say if it's a sofa we're talking about or an armchair, it can be recovered. The frames last X amount of years because it's hardwood, and then it just needs to be recovered. And you know, we've used them for a long time, and we have clients who are you know, have had sofas for 15 years and are now having that same sofa recovered. The fillings are still great. You know, everything's good. It's just being recovered. And now, obviously, with the fabrics, you know, sort of innovations in fabric as well, and companies being more responsible about the fabrics that they're supplying, you'd imagine that they would last a lot longer now.
Is that something clients are buying into? Are they engaged with the whole conversation around longevity and
Well, it's our job to educate them, isn't it, really?
And is that going well, that conversation for you with clients?
Yeah, I think so. Everyone's interested in being responsible, aren't they? Well, most of the people that we come into contact with definitely are interested in being responsible about what they're, you know, not sending things to landfill. I mean, you know, it's quite shocking if you look at that.
I know TP Bennett have a sustainability team who do a lot of due diligence and research, presumably, to that legwork for you. But Fiona, how do you cope with, you know, going through all the materials? Is that all Meg's job, or is there somebody else that you've got in the office? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, obviously we visit a lot of our suppliers just to find out these things. You know, that is what you need to do.
So really put them under scrutiny, let them off easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And even companies that send packaging, I am always going mental at companies that send out. Honestly, it is my one big bugbear, isn't it, Meg, right? I literally go berserk and I say, why are you sending me stuff with plastic wrapping? What are you even thinking about? Mm. And I mean, to be honest, a lot of the company, we'll either stop using them if they say they're not going to change their policy, we'll stop using them, or we'll find someone that is more responsible.
Must be heartening for you to hear that sort of feedback, right?
I mean, phew. We deliver our mattresses and our beds in canvas bags. And,
you do. And then, you do, and they're and lovely. Then, and people and keep then, them have, because they're so great.
Yeah, and we have nice people who take them to the room and put them in there, and there's no packaging. Mm. It's not always possible to do that if the house is a complete building site. Sometimes then they say, we have a biodegradable polymer. And sometimes it's not possible, but I think about 80%, 85% of all our retail orders go out in canvas bags now. So there's no packages.
Fabulous. And Mel, I'm guessing with your projects, you probably set sustainability goals with your clients right from the off, do you?
Yeah.
The initials are brief.
Yeah. If we're following Well or Breham or, any of those kind of, sustainability credentials. Yeah.
Have you done Passive House?
I haven't personally. We do have a passive house specialist within our team. Architecture side.
Right. What is the one piece of advice you would give to designers who aspire to produce healthy buildings and a healthy planet for their clients? Fiona.
Thanks, Sue.
I would say be responsible. Go and visit your suppliers and... Sorry, that's three things. Buy local.
Good. Perfect.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's quite similar as well, actually. Is ask questions. Have those open conversations with your suppliers. It's very hard to get a project or a specification perfect. But as long as you're having those open conversations and working with your partners and consultants, then, yeah.
We're getting there, yeah. And
Buy natural. Buy once, buy for the long term.
Yes. Yeah. Good. That's a good piece. Yeah.
That's a brilliant piece for advice. Well, thanks very much. I think round of applause. That was a brilliant discussion. Nice. I mean, it is. I was talking to a designer beforehand about what designers have to do and how big your job is, and it seems to be expanding exponentially to embrace all these things. I don't know, where do you find the time to do design, Fiona?
Yeah, that's next job. No, it's true. You have to know so much.
So much.
Yeah.
And also, I find, you know...
Well, can I just say one thing?
Go for it, yeah.
Suppliers don't know.
I am not pushing books here, just so everyone knows.
She's on commission from Waterstones.
Am not. However, I must tell you, because this wonderful book, which is sent by the RIBA, but it's the BIID project book, interior design project book, written by the wonderful Susie.
Done.
And truly, if any of you, there's a wonderful section in here on sustainability as well. And it is our Bible in our studio. We look at it a lot.
Thank you.
We look at it a lot. And anytime if we have anyone new, this is, we could just put that in front of them and just say, read it.
Cover to cover.
No, it is on. It is wonderful. It's the BIID Interior Design Project book written by our lovely Susie. And it's a really good guide to have for everything that we've discussed here today. And I am seriously not on commission, but I just like to, I like to share these things.
Thanks, Fiona. Thank you. That's really good. Thanks so much for your time this evening. It's been great. Thank you, Fiona. Thank you, Mel. And thank you, Mark, as well. It's been brilliant. So thank you for being such wonderful guests.
And some fantastic insights from you all. It's been a really inspiring conversation. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you also to our live audience here tonight with us and our host NaturalMet for their hospitality. We do hope you've enjoyed this episode, and please do get in touch on our social channels at Interior Design Business Pod to share any feedback. The Interior Design Business is a Wildwood Plus production. Thank you.